Hey everyone, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we are starting a Nora Ephron month. Be a little bit romantic, a little bit silly, a little fun. We are starting with the classic Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan movie, You've Got Mail. But we are doing a whole month of Nora Ephron. Nothing quite like a 90s rom-com, which is kind of a genre which doesn't exist anymore. You know, actual big stars with an actual director, rather than the Netflix stuff that they just kind of pump out on the reg. So in the meantime, please enjoy as we talk a little bit about You've Got Mail and flashback to the old era of dial-up internet. Thanks, guys.
This week on Myopia Movies, we're watching the only propaganda film put out by AOL Time Warner. You've Got Mail! Or should I do it again? You've Got Mail.
You've Got Mail.
We are kicking off our Nora Ephron month. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. As children of the 90s, mostly, we are talking about a time when rom-coms had actual actors and didn't end up only on Netflix or softcore pornography.
We're also talking about times when modems sounded like R2-D2 having an orgasm.
And so we are talking about the Nora Ephron, Meg Ryan, and Tom Hanks movie, which is, I guess, set in an era where you had to pick up free minutes by going to...
Barnes & Noble's all about that shit back in the day. Right at the counter, they'd have like, here's 2,000 free hours or minutes, I guess it was minutes, of AOL.
Okay, so before we even get into this, first of all, I'll introduce myself. Hi, I'm Nick Coffin, host of this also required reading, which if you're not listening to, we charted in 15 countries last year. Where have you been? But also, Cineprov, we're back, baby. So join us at the Plaza Theater. And on panel, we have...
Hello, this is Daniel, a contributor to PopDose.com, frequent annoyance of Nick, and I'm currently connecting at 56,000 kilobytes a second.
And?
Interesting. My name is Nor Chernet. I think I'm 60 frames per second.
Oh, there you go.
So you
don't remember the AOL login?
No, but, you know, I was the kid that went on the phone, and they were like...
Oh, that happened to me.
So I was going to actually say this. I'm. You did.
Do you remember?
Do you have anything else to plug, like the Norcast or?
Well, Norcast is on the shelf, unfortunately.
I'm poking the bear, buddy.
But I'm promoting life and my opinion.
And here's the thing: we you should be on more often than if you're not making your own shit. I have a question for the two of you.
Yes.
I'm 37.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first time I went online.
Mm-hmm.
Do the rest of you?
Yes, I do. I can't tell you how old I was, but I wanted to know how big the U.S. was.
Okay.
So we had one computer.
Sure. It was probably beige or off-white.
They had
eggshell.
A tube of a monitor.
Oh, sure. You could kill a man with that monitor.
you know, a normal desktop that looks like... everyone has desktops.
Was it Compaq that decided to buck the trend and it's like, this is now different colors. You can get your computer as sour apple color.
And the beige rectangle had a slight curved bit, and you were like, holy shit, look how stylish I feel.
Fucking weigh 2,000 pounds, dude.
You should...
We had one family computer.
Uh-huh.
In the dedicated computer room.
It was my parents' room.
Oh.
My parents were supposed to be in this computer, but it was my mom and dad's room.
Which adds weight to the situation.
When I turned 12. Anyways.
Right.
type in really big fish, and that was my first experience of the other side of the...
So, and he's 7 years younger than I am, so you're 30. Did you have AOL?
We had AOL.
There you go.
Yep. And my sister, I think I was young, but my sister utilized it because she was on the IM chat.
Oh, of course.
It was a fucking big deal if you had different colors.
Sure. And it was before you could turn on. I was there early enough. It was before you could sit, like, ignore people. So it would just say, you're online. And then people would message you.
Does anybody else remember that commercial for AOL where they had the instant messenger icon, like, having sex with a woman, and then at the end of it, it just ran away?
Yes.
They didn't show the sex, but it was just this woman in a nightie afterwards going, that was amazing. Are you going to stay or do you have to run? And then the icon
and
just...
And the door slammed.
Yeah.
It was the door slam sound.
And she just said, icons.
I did have the Matthew Perry, Jennifer Aniston, how to...
Wait. A friend's tutorial. Oh, dude.
Oh, my God.
I just remember seeing the...
Which means that Jerry Seinfeld said no. But no, I just... I remember having the minutes. I remember having an AOL account. I remember my first screen name, GameDude3. What was yours?
I didn't have one.
Oh, really?
I was parental control.
Gotcha. So you were in as whatever the default, which is probably a series of letters and numbers and nonsense. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I could online chat because, you know, predators.
I just remember, like, because eventually I have two brothers, and we got a computer as, like, birthday or Christmas gift, you know, one day. And it was, like, a big deal to have our own computer. But no, like, the internet was just... And children who listen to us who are much younger, it wasn't a website or a QR code. There was AOL keywords. And I mean, we're talking the 90s. So it was like keyword Jurassic Park. And then it would come up to be, God, like pixels the size of canned hams. Like it looked barely like a T-Rex, but damn it.
Sheesh. Oh, well, Nick.com was the shit back in the day.
Nick.com.
All the quizzers. Oh, yeah.
Seinfeld had... they had games. Because remember, you couldn't really download shit other than the Doom demo and, like, Wolfenstein 3D.
Oh, you can download anything. I mean, I remember Napster back in the day would take 2 hours to download...
a single track.
Yep.
And it would end up being wrong.
Remember, well, I guess LimeWire was my...
LimeWire was the successor. Because the thing was, to quote... whatever, I think it's a Marx quote, but he goes, the one thing you can't kill is an idea. And so Napster, which was this, you know, it was this specific thing, but once it was killed, there were 300 ripoffs. And then it became Kazaa and Morpheus and...
BearShare.
BearShare, yeah, no, sure. And so, yeah.
Is this not a cyberpunk movie?
How is this how is there no cyber sex in this?
The Lawnmower Man had that covered, like, what, 5 years before this movie came out?
They mentioned it. They did. Oh, dude. Edith Bunker talks. I almost had cyber sex once. And you're just like, all right, little
Wait,
lady.
That was Edith Bunker?
Yeah, that's why they ever sit at a piano at one point.
Was Edith Bunker?
From an old show called...
All in the Family.
Yeah, it's a classic old sitcom. One of the first that...
Her husband was a racist
Archie.
Dickhead.
But yeah, the Archie. Thing was... It was not.
Yes,
and it's the way. And their neighbors were the Jeffersons, who end up getting their own spinoff. Yes. But like the point was that he was a racist in the way that Americans were racist. So he was actually dealing with it as opposed to pretending everyone was hunky dory like in Mayberry.
And then Sammy Davis Jr. kissed him on the cheek. I remember
right.
in a media class watching that episode.
Anyway, Norman Fell.
I think he created it, yeah.
But regardless, she's the old lady in the bookstore. Who, yeah.
What's the call with Tom Hanks in?
Bosom Buddies is the answer to that. And it's...
That's the one he was cross-dressing?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was one where... I think it was all... Not All in the Family. Which one was the one that...
Family Matters? Which one?
Jason Bateman.
Ooh.
Arrested Development?
No, when he was a kid.
Oh, God, right, because he was the other Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, because he was, he was some drunk guy, and he had, like, a drinking problem, and this is, like, young Tom Hanks, like, Money Pit Tom Hanks.
Right.
I gotta look that up. But, yeah, no.
Silver Spoons, is that what you're thinking of? I'm just on Wikipedia right now for Jason Bateman, and that's coming up, and it was actually Norman Lear, not Norman Fell.
Yeah. So, Trinette. You've seen this movie 1,000 times.
You got mail, yes. For only one reason.
Yeah, we haven't introduced it. This is You've Got Mail.
Oh, yeah, we're doing You've Got Mail.
Can you give us a plot?
Sure. And I would love to do this. So check this out. So we're in, like, what year is this?
It came out in 98.
Basically, as the internet has gotten to fruition, we have now what we have is AOL chat rooms, or just, you know, like was it pen pals essentially. So we have Tom Hanks, which is, I believe his last name was Fox, but that was his first name.
Joe Fox, I think.
We have two lovers by Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, with this like 16th movie together, and essentially they're pen pals, but very like, I want to say, they're basically committing adultery in a sense, because they're two people in relationships who is like sneaking around like, ooh.
She's Greg Kinnear's girlfriend, and he's Parker Posey's boyfriend.
Right. Yeah. And so we have two essential lovers, things, and they're just chatting with each other. They don't know their names, nothing specifics, but little do they know, they're actually enemies, because Meg Ryan's character has this nice little posh local bookstore, whereas Tom Hanks is a big corporate Barnes & Noble's Borders. Oh my God, y'all remember Borders?
Oh yeah, there you. It shows how dated this movie is. That something like Borders could drive a bookstore out of business.
So they're enemies when they're in real life, but in this cyberverse, they're actually lovers.
And they have cyber sex.
They don't have cyber sex. They have what is equivalent to cyber sex. If you want,
it's a classy sort of cyber sex in this case. These days, you just send GIFs of that Lemmy Smash bird, and then you don't remember that. Let me smash. I got you blue.
Let's walk through this.
Anyway, penis. So essentially. And Loki, this movie.
It's Catfish the movie. Before Catfish the documentary.
So imagine Catfish, but just something more, a little fluff, and it has a good ending. You know, I mean, was it like the GG? We went into these chat rooms. I didn't go to these chat rooms. Was it like that?
Oh, totally. I mean,
oh yeah.
I mean, Discord is the death of civilization, as we've all agreed a long time. But like, these chat rooms were that. Like, you could pick locality or category, like Atlanta blank or you know, 30 and whatever. Mm. That's
and
what they were.
A lot of them were indeed secretly sex related. I think Futurama had a good joke on it back in the day, maybe during their first season, when Fry walks into the filthy, filthy chat room, and Lilo's like, oh, that's disgusting. How can he possibly go into one of these? You know what? I'm going to stand up for my principles and go into this one, and it's filthy chat room.
But that's the gag. We should
everything
also mention
online eventually devolves into sex.
It just surprised me. Like, they're talking about, the movie's called You Got Mail. It's said many times, but there was no proverbial, no, like, how did you not have a clean internet experience, you know? And was Wi-Fi available at this time?
No, God, no.
They are hooked up to shit. Like, they were actual laptops with no cord, no antenna sticking up from a USB. So
and the Mac logo was so small you could barely see it. Yeah, she had a Mac, and it's just so funny to see the tiny logo. I'm like, they would not have allowed that today. It has to be huge.
It's actually interesting. Nick, you made a commentary like this movie is basically trying to support local business or things in that picture, but then they fucking go to Starbucks.
Dude.
Oh, yeah.
Every other scene is at a Starbucks, and at one point they go to a fancy coffee and dessert place to only end up at a Starbucks the next.
I think the Starbucks wanted fun in this movie. No, and the reason why I like this movie, Nick, is because a young Dave Chappelle was.
Yes, he was.
Like any other movie, he was the best black friend.
Is this why The Nutty Professor's your favorite movie, that remake with Eddie Murphy, because Dave Chappelle was in that?
Oh, dude, he's making all kinds of fat jokes in that one.
Sure. Like King Kong with titties!
Speaking of, we can just talk about the cast. This is the third movie, like third or fourth movie with Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks. Third, Joe versus the Volcano, Sleepless in Seattle. Stay tuned. And this, I think, are the three I can think of. But they're great together. They have chemistry on screen immediately. You also, of course, have, like you said, Parker Posey, who like is on in this movie. Like, she's late all the time. Like, she flies through scenes and she's gone. We have Greg Kinnear, who, frankly,
he doesn't age.
He does not age. I was gonna say, he looks fantastic in this, and this is, and now we're 30 years later, 25 years later, he still looks fantastic.
No,
the fuckable Greg Kinnear. And Chappelle, frankly, he hasn't aged much either. But
raspy voice now because all the cigarettes and mushroom teeth.
I'll tell you what though, whatever he's doing is working for him because he's still rail thin like he was in his mid-20s. And to quote him, cocaine is a hell of a drug.
That was not him. That was the actual Rick James in that sketch.
Yeah. One of them is still alive.
That dude was severely fucked up.
So once again, we get Tom Hanks being everyone's favorite whatever. Like, cause,
Well, no, he wasn't everyone's favorite.
I was just going to say, we start the movie being introduced to the two of them separately. Tom Hanks' dad and granddad are the head of Fox Books.
Did you notice that his granddad was Clark Griswold's dad from Christmas Vacation?
I did. And, oh God, what's the dad? I just had the dad a second ago.
The one looks like Dr. Phil.
Dabney Coleman. Yeah. Dabney Coleman is the dad. He's going through, he's been divorced for the third time, he says, and he's about to marry someone new, and Tom Hanks being a charmer to these children.
I want to say what? 35, 40s in between.
He's probably in his mid-30s.
I would guess mid-30s.
Father and grandfather, they out here fucking.
Oh, dude, they're out fucking.
So we
hear about his grandfather's crush on the owner of the shop around the corner like three times. She was the nicest old lady who ever signed my book.
At one point in the movie, he's accompanied by a family member of his, but a young young boy and a young girl. The young boy, if I'm not mistaken, is his uncle, and there's like a 30-year age gap.
Right.
The young girl is actually his sister. That's it, right? Or how the
yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Ew. The funny joke is that no, this is we're modern day Americans.
Yeah, modern America.
Two things. First and foremost, this movie came out the same year that Viagra was approved by the FDA to treat erectile dysfunction. So that explains the grandfather's funk.
So
good on him. Yeah. Also, just as an aside, we are about to do three movies in a row where Meg Ryan is our female lead, and this whole time, it's just. Some good-looking dudes here. Because here she has to choose between Greg Kinnear and Tom Hanks. In Sleepless in Seattle, she chooses between Bill Pullman and Tom Hanks.
President.
Well, it's because she dumped him that he decided to run for president.
Well, yeah. We've already done the one with the best cinematic president, and that's Air Force One with President Harrison Ford.
President Punch. Give me back my plane. Dude, that trailer dropped recently. First of all, I'm there because it's Indiana Jones, but
the deep fakes on the face.
Oh my god. The next thing we're going to do is get a cut to a young like George Lucas and Steven Spielberg directing the fucking thing. Yeah. Like it's going to be bad.
Indiana Jones and that goddamn Korean nurse. That's what I thought the subtitle was going to be. I don't know, but no, I was just saying because he's old and in a nursing home. That goddamn Korean nurse is stealing my pills.
Shit, okay, I guess
the second thing in terms of the character's age, Tom Hanks was, this came out the year he turned 42, so. Yeah,
and I was.
Well, you got mail, Kevin, when he was 42?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was born in 1956.
And it's funny because he has that, and again, it's not that he's a fat guy, but he has that little baby fat. So he looks still like he's in his like 30s. And it's that curly hair and that mop top. And he's also one of the more charming people who's ever lived.
Tom Hanks, for real. Because I just want to see how nice he is, you know? But I think he's at the age right now where the only roles, I think Nick and I were talking about this, is where he has to play like the old plantation owner.
Yeah.
Nixon.
Did anyone see Elvis with him as Tom Parker?
Yeah.
It was good.
My now fiance and myself watched the first we watched the first 50 minutes of it one night and then went to sleep and then the next day we're like, "So that Elvis movie, do you feel like finishing it?" And she was like, "No. Do you?" And I was like, "Nah, not really."
Pop-ish for you?
Baz Luhrmann movies give me headaches.
With the lights and flares and shit?
Yeah, I kind of like him, so. Yeah. I mean, I will say, I guess, podcast friend of the show, We Hate Movies, Chris Cabin called him Senator Age. This would be Senator Age, where he's old enough now that he could be a governor or a president. He's not the love interest. He's like the guy with power that you want the power.
Right.
Yeah. Right. But he's good in this. Anyway, so the whole thing comes down to the fact that they don't know who each other are. And she has a cute little bookstore called The Shop Around the Corner. This is based on a play called The Perfumerie, but it was also based on a movie, which is on HBO Max. As we're recording this, who knows when it comes out, but as we are talking now, you've got Males on HBO Max. And the original Shop Around the Corner is also on HBO Max. So you can see the old Clark Gable version or whatever, Cary Grant version.
Oh, there you go.
But as we're talking now, after a day of fun and entertainment, taking these kids around to a street fair and all this stuff, they see that it's story time at the Shop Around the Corner. So Tom Hanks goes in with a bunch of balloons.
It's one of those drag queen story times that Ron DeSantis hates. No, not really, but seriously, fuck that guy.
And we are taken through the Shop Around the Corner, and we've seen it before. Like the movie, essentially, each scene break is New York waking up as people slide the metal gates up.
Is this one of those movies where the city is also a character?
Why do so many...
You didn't even mention this because we talked about it before, yeah. But this whole city is rendered in CGI?
Why is it...
That was a digital age, you know, the hints why... Did AOL fund this?
AOL must have had money into that.
Oh, yeah. This is why I can't imagine ever living in New York, because everybody who lives there, especially in Manhattan, is constantly just walking around touching themselves over the fact that they live in Manhattan. Yeah, I live in a 400-square-foot apartment. It costs me $3,000 a month, but I'm on the east side. I'm on all right near Central Park. Don't IM me or anything about the geography. I don't care. And it's the greatest thing I've ever done. It's like, no, it's not.
Man, I need an old school New York. I need to see Times Square where there's a bunch of porn.
You've got mail. Huh? You've got mail with Travis Bickle as one of the people that's emailing.
There you go.
That's probably dated.
Taxi driver.
One with
Robert De Niro. You talking to me?
I was thinking of Taxi with Christopher Lloyd and
Danny DeVito.
No.
Andy Kaufman, Judd Hirsch, Jackie Chan,
Carol Kane, I think was in it.
Oh, by the by, if Jackie Chan went on SNL and goes and played the Mighty Mouse theme and said,
oh,
"Thank
man.
You very much," and then walked off.
So this big movie is basically about corporate America and how it shits on a little guy.
Except for Starbucks.
I was wondering if the name Fox Books was somehow a dig at Rupert Murdoch.
It might be. I mean, this is a Time Warner company. They might be... If
was AOL part of Time Warner at that point? I thought that came a couple years later and was... I know it was an absolute
I'm trying
disaster.
To help you out here. I have no idea.
All right.
But...
Discovery Plus now.
Right.
Discovery Plus. Yeah, like who knows what HBO Max will have next week, let alone in a couple months, but we'll see.
Speaking of HBO Max and White Lotus, who was it? Steve Zahn?
Steve Zahn.
He's a young... It's weird.
It's the Clinton administration, so Steve Zahn has a job.
Is that a joke? Is that a...
No, oh, no, he was in every movie in the 90s.
And in the early 2000s.
I don't understand why this guy isn't as big now, because, like, he... I think what's that movie, Sahara?
Yep, Sahara's awful.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing in it. But he just keeps missing. I don't know why he's not like a big name.
He kind of was for a little bit. He was a good character actor.
He was nominated.
I really didn't know who he was. Like, I knew who he was. I'm like, hey, that's the fucking guy from, thing. It still is, you know.
The guy from that, you know, that thing. Well, and he was, and again, for a while, he was literally in every movie. Yeah.
He was in That Thing You Do, which is probably how he ended up in this movie.
True. Let's see. There was one. Was that the one with Drew Barrymore?
That Thing You Do? That was the Tom Hanks movie.
He was in Reality Bites, too, and he was in Crimson Tide. And he was in everything. I don't know. It's Steve Zahn. Like, if you don't know what we're talking about, look him up.
He was in a version of Hamlet that had Ethan Hawke as Hamlet, and he was Rosencrantz.
He played
He was.
Lawrence and National Security. No.
Yeah, totally. He was in Saving Silverman. Oh, we can keep mentioning things no one's seen. Employee of the Month. He was also in Shattered Glass. You would have talked about a bad...
Oh, boy.
Like a weird movie. That's Anakin Skywalker, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Anyway, the shop around the corner is filled with some charming characters who really don't matter. But I mean, like, okay, so let's get to something dramatic actually happening. So they're chatting back and forth. Greg Kinnear is like a culture writer. I don't know. He's like an incredibly pretentious New Yorker style writer.
He feels like a Sex and the City character.
He does. And he's incredibly annoying and unlikable. But what happens is there's like a writing industry dinner cocktail thing, which is, it's such a strange scene because it's this beautiful, I'm going to assume it's a publisher, but like there's floor to ceiling books, there's a cocktail and drink table, right? But the whole premise is the previous scene we've seen them together is he's not saying that he's a fox because now that the new Fox Brothers books is opening up, or the Fox books is opening up, everyone's worried that they'll go out of business next. This is, I mean, Borders obviously is referenced here, but it's really the 90s fear of Walmart, right?
Walmart was the real villain in the 90s and the early 2000s. Everything you hear about Amazon now and how they mistreat their workers, now they're too big, that was all Walmart talk back in the day.
But specifically is that they were ruining small town America and the, you know, the family store on the corner square, which frankly had been going out for a long time, but you need a villain. And so that's what this was. This was creating a villain.
Am I the only one, though, who thinks that the Fox Brothers shop looked really cool?
I miss Borders.
Yeah.
Like, I miss Barnes & Noble. I actually miss those places. And there are still Barnes & Nobles. Just about half of them are gone around me. The whole idea was he gets pulled in for the story time and then buys a bunch of books. And he's shocked that they charge full price for the books.
That's bullshit, though. I mean, everyone was back in the day. If anything, Barnes & Noble was undercutting the manufactured price, and it was the indie bookstores that...
He paid $100 for 4 books.
Or whatever, something like that, 80 bucks, 70, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well...
Even for the 90s.
That is a lot.
I would have taken my ass to Borders.
Yeah, and that was his line, like the discount is the thing, whatever. But
I view these books as olive oil or whatever she accuses him of saying.
Well, he does have that line. He goes, you know,
we're the price club, but instead of like giant gallons of olive oil for $3, we sell books.
That's right. So she realizes that, he's a fox at this, and then they go to this dinner party together. And that's where we have the second scene where he steals the caviar off this plate, which is a whole thing. And then there's this woman walking around with a full Thanksgiving turkey. And I was obsessed with her because this is a cocktail, you know, these small plates and a drink. And she's holding a 30-pound turkey walking around.
It's decor.
It is. Well, it's something.
What do we actually think about these characters? I mean, Joe Fox, neither of them are malicious people, granted, but I think it builds Joe too much up as a villain.
I mean, here's the thing. It's a rom-com at the end of the day, so they're going to have that tension. Out of all the rom-coms, this one is kind of like, Jennifer Love Hewitt had a movie way back in the day. It was like a straight Lifetime.
Single white female.
Uh-huh. Was she in that?
I had an affair with my husband. So essentially, so what happened was, cheating on her by via pen pal was really her.
I'm pretty sure that's the plot of the Pina Colada song.
Do you like Pina Coladas and getting drunk in the rain? That song, that's what it's about. They answer classified ad. That's the classified ad. Do you like Pina Coladas and getting drunk in the rain? They're writing it and they answer each other's own personal ads. That reminds me of the Arrested Development sketch where he sings, where, what's her name, Portia de la Rossi, sings Afternoon Delights with her nephew, and they don't realize the lyrics. And then Jason Bateman sings it with his niece. Woo!
Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan basically hate each other at this point. They coincide by writing each other and not knowing who they are. I think her name was like Book Girl.
Yeah, he called her Book Shop Girl. She's Shop Girl. An NYC one, whatever his address is. Right. Yeah.
And the number of people who thinks he looks like Clark Gable. That's what it was.
It was, oh, dude. And then when they're doing the thing where they're trolling each other, that's. And we have to remember, this movie's, first of all, 2 hours. Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God.
I don't like to shit on movies, as we all know. I'm here defending them. But this movie was an hour too long.
But the last hour of it, he's catfishing her. Just for a second, we've got to go back to this dinner party because all the significant others also meet each other. Right. Because Greg Kinnear is there and is charmed, because everyone's charmed by Tom Hanks and everyone's charmed by Greg Kinnear. And then Parker Posey shows up and goes, "Oh, you're this guy? I love your writing. Love your writing." And then she goes off on this monologue about how she takes like pills each night to go to sleep called.
With the hangover and things like that, yeah.
Ultra Dorm or whatever it's called.
Because he asked, because he knows who the spots person is, and he was like, "How do you sleep at night?" And boom, she shows up. And she says, "Drugs." Mm-hmm. You know.
And again, it's just, and these characters. She shows up as comic relief because she's barely in the movie. So when Tom Hanks and her break up, you're like, "Who?" Again, what? Yeah. But the incredibly fuckable Greg Kinnear in this, because he's looking good. Although he's dressed like a smart guy stereotype from The Simpsons, because he's got a turtleneck. He has
with the turtleneck and the glasses and the gliven
and the houndstooth blazer with the patches. And he's talking about like comparing Foucault to, and you're just like, "Guys, I know it's 90s, so you have to talk about Foucault, but Jesus Christ, who cares?"
He looks like what's her name? Allison, Lisa's rival, her dad, the "I have a ball, perhaps you'd like to bounce it" guy.
Dude, but that's just it. It's also, and again, we're literally doing 4 rom-coms this month, so God help us all. But the thing about this one which drives me the most nuts is I don't understand why the original couples like each other. You made a reference at front. The problem, the thing about rom-coms is always that one of the couples usually is wrong for each other and they're finding Mr. or Mrs. Right. Right. In this, they're both wrong for each other, but we don't get any of it. We don't get why he likes Parker Posey. I mean, again, it's a 1998 Parker Posey. She's an attractive woman, but they spend on screen together a total of 3.5 minutes of a 2-hour movie. So she runs in, takes a double shot of espresso, and runs out of the movie.
She's like Reese Witherspoon in American Psycho.
Well, let's check this out. Let's get into the psychiatry of the thing. Of course they broke up. Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan are basically fucking each other on the internet. They're not spending their quality time with significant others. Of course they broke up. You know what I'm saying? But I will say I do like... Well, actually, I don't like how they actually did the breakups in this.
I don't.
Tom and his girl was stuck in the elevator, and she didn't say, "When I get out of here, I'm gonna."
They were all talking about things they love, and she goes, "When I get out of here, I'm gonna take a loud shit," or whatever she says.
"I can't find the Tic Tacs," or some shit like that. And with Meg and her boo, I think they had a mutual agreement where they just didn't love each other.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that's the best part. I mean, it's the Seinfeld thing, the impossible, like the good breakup. But also at the same time,
it is a good breakup.
No, breakups are terrible in general. But there's a reason for that, because you should be emotionally invested. Neither of them are emotionally invested in shit. That's the funny thing. Like, I also can't see. It's funny. Tom Hanks and Parker Posey. It almost makes sense because she's like an editor publisher. He's in charge of a bookstore. They probably met at a corporate thing. I don't know how Meg Ryan and Greg Kinnear got together because he's so unlikable. At one point that he's like, he reveals to her that he's bought another typewriter and there's another one on the other side of the table. And this is her place, not his place. And he has more of them at home. And at one point, apparently he wrote an editorial about how much he loves his, because he's a Luddite. He's talking about how some company in New York has banned the use of solitaire because of how much time they've lost to it. And so he's like, okay, so I use a typewriter, and he writes this editorial about how much he loves his typewriter, which Parker Posey loves, by the way, which we get to. It's just, it's so much.
So, like, I remember when he did that. So, essentially, so going back to the plot of the movie.
God help you.
So, essentially, what Meg Ryan and her little shop in the corner were trying to do is, so, within their IM chats, obviously, this big Fox Brothers Barnes & Noble store is gutting the local shop, essentially. And so, she doesn't know what to do. In one of the IM chats, they're talking her and Tom Hanks, Tom is essentially, they go into a quick IM chat, and he's basically saying, you gotta go to war, essentially. And they keep referencing The Godfather, which was obviously a big thing.
Yeah.
Oh, God help me.
The mattresses thing?
Take him to the mattress, yeah. And so, essentially, she goes on this, basically, this PR to try and just say how shitty this corporation is doing to her store.
Yeah.
I forgot where I was going. Okay. I forgot where I was going with this.
Well, then we can take a pause while you think about it. The Godfather thing in this is so fucking funny to me, because I know those people too who just quote movies that they don't really get. And so eventually she does go to Greg Kinnear and says, "Do you know what taking it to the mattresses means?"
The Godfather.
The Godfather. And again, like, I'm not. We're on a film podcast. Nothing is sadder than people who quote movies like Fight Club or Scarface, where they haven't, they don't really get the movie. They just quote them because they, which is
Midnight Cowboy,
or an X-rated film,
where one of the main characters is named Rizzo, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, Ratso Rizzo, like Rizzo the Rat from the Muppets. But here's the thing: it's just so funny how everyone knows The Godfather, and also that he feels the need to explain The Godfather, which is just, it's
people seem to forget that everyone in The Godfather are criminals.
Well,
you can utilize The Godfather in any situation. When you want to know the date, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, when you want to take the business, you put a horse in the fucking mattress. When you, when you figure out your brother's triple crossing or double crossing you, you will set him up and say, "Oh, you disappointed me." Kiss him on the face in the middle of a
park. Or what's the other one? You leave the gun, you take the cannoli. Like, they bring it up.
Out of pack, leave the gun, take the cannoli.
And again, I know I'm throwing stones from a glass house because I have the 4K of the Godfather movies, and I love the Godfather movies. But at the same time, dude, know your audience. And it's so funny how it is such a Nora Ephron talking about guys. Wasn't she dating, was it Scorsese? No.
I don't know why you're looking at me as you're asking about Nora Ephron's dating life.
No.
Not Coppola. Yeah, that would have been weird.
I thought she dated someone. Fuck. I'm sure she dated someone. That's such a stupid sentence I just said out of my mouth.
So anyways, so as Kathleen is going on this PR stunt, so essentially put down this Barnes & Noble store, her boo, Greg Lanier, named Frank, he goes on this talk show, which basically is just fucking flirting with the hostess of the talk show, essentially.
Oh my God, she can barely, like, by the end of that interview, her legs are practically wide open.
Like, her hands sweating? So, like, this relationship between them is just not working out in every aspect of the way. But maybe because we like fucking Greg
Kinnear,
we don't see it that way. We see Tom and his boo. She's an asshole, but we love Greg.
So, here's what I was thinking of, and I apologize, and Daniel, good luck editing all this together. But Nora Ephron was dating a guy named Nicholas Pileggi at the time. And so
Not the Godfather.
No, he wrote Goodfellas. And at the time, they were hanging out with the guy, Henry Hill, that Goodfellas was based on. So he was just this, you know, like, complaining about the food, like, getting drunk, hitting on women, like, just mafia ex dude. And that's why she wrote My Blue Heaven, which is Steve Martin as a mafia guy and Rick Moranis as the FBI agent has to keep track of him. But in the 90s...
Wait, she wrote My Blue Heaven?
Yeah.
Huh.
So at the time, she was, I don't know if they were dating or married, probably married, but to Nicholas Pileggi. So she had to deal with all the shit as they were writing Goodfellas. So it's almost a jab in the ribs to say everyone quotes the Godfather, but not Goodfellas. That's what I was thinking of.
All right. It would have been a lot better if this movie opened up with, I don't know, Tom Hanks witnessing a stabbing and saying that as far back as he can remember, he always wanted to drive a small independent bookstore out of business.
Well, that's kind of what the dad's like. He's like, you know what? I got hard today because I closed another bookstore. and they're listening who's left. And there's like a bookstore called Sleuth on 43rd Street. And there's this shop around the corner.
Ironically, a lot of those places survived the post-Barnes & Noble world.
New York, baby!
It's funny because the night before we watched this, we were in a local landmark, but we were in Decatur Square, and there's that beautiful little kids' bookstore right there. And I'm
there you go.
These places do survive.
It's been a long time since I've been to Decatur Square.
Worth it.
Just wanting.
What's that one place there? Is it the Iberian Pig?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I had that last night for work out there.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, wait, is that a corporate thing? No.
It's actually a small little restaurant. My favorite over there is the Brickstore Pub. And they own a second restaurant, which is the one around the corner, Leon's Full Service, which is just excellent.
The one in Buckhead, if that's what you're referring to. There's probably two left.
I think there's one in there's one in Decatur Square, I think.
And then there's another one in Buckhead, just south of Phipps. So, right around here, she admits that on their emails, she's in trouble. Her business is in trouble. At first, they were talking about, oh, people would definitely stay around. This isn't, they come back because they love us. They love our place. But finally, you know,
she closes the business.
Well, we're not there yet. Well, I was going to say, Edith Bunker says we're down $1,200 a month, yada, yada, yada. And she goes, I need help. And we already brought up the mattresses thing. But as we're approaching here, she finally asks her boyfriend to say, do a story on this. She reads it, yada, yada, yada. And they get a bunch of press, but they don't actually get any business because people will protest, but they're not going to buy.
Yep.
Which is a very kind of Gen X criticism.
I mean, that's been the case for decades now at this point. People will like try and fight for that little indie bookstore, but nobody actually goes there. I mean, that's why, as we're recording this, UA Terra shut down after 55 years, and everyone was like, oh, what a tragedy that indie movie theater off Cheshire Bridge Road shut down after all that time. That's where Smokey and the Bandit premiered. It's like, when was the last time you were actually there?
Right.
If you don't go there, it's going to close.
Well, and again, you know, and they keep cutting back to Fox and Brothers or Fox and Books or whatever it's called. And it's full. And there's people getting, you know, lattes and reading, which is what they call it. I will say one of my favorite jokes is when they first open, a guy walks in with a backpack. And he has a backpack filled with his own lunch. He brings out a salt shake.
Salt packets. He brings his own table salt.
It's a good gag.
So I guess she feels defeated at some point.
But I mean, and then here's where she asks, you know, New York City, Tom Hanks's email character. It's like, no specifics, but my business is failing. He goes, I'm an expert at business. This is where we get to take it to the mattress thing. And this is also followed up by the protest, yada, yada. And this is where he and Chappelle are running at this gym. Yeah. It's funny. I mean,
no, it is. See, this is why I don't do live interviews. Someone stopped me at Publix the other day. This is when Georgia had extended the abortion laws to 6 weeks. And some people will try to get me at Publix. Say, hey, sir, you want to make a comment about this? And I'm like,
absolutely not. No.
Because they did my boy Tom wrong. They only got a small snippet, and he was like, I forgot what he says, but essentially it made him like fall over essentially on the treadmill.
Yeah.
But I think right after this, or shortly right after, they actually decided to meet in person.
Ooh. With his dog, Brinkley?
No. This is when they first meet in the coffee shop.
Yes, all right.
They meet in the coffee shop. Anyone could be nervous at meeting their internet boo. And him and Dave, which his name is Kevin, and Joe Fox. So Kevin and Joe walk to the coffee shop and essentially just...
Oh, and he makes fun of her. So he goes, so there's going to be a symbol to see who they are. Right. And it's going to be a book with a... he goes, what is it? A book with a rose in it? And he goes...
But that's okay, it's a rom-com. That's what you got to do.
Wasn't it Pride and Prejudice? And there was a whole thing about how Joe's never read actual books.
Yeah. Well, that's her joke. And the answer is that he actually does read. He likes books.
He doesn't like Pride and Prejudice.
Which I get. It's fine. I've read the Brontes. I've read Jane Eyre.
I was obsessed with Pride and Prejudice.
I mean, why are they obsessed with rom-coms? It's a romantic story. It's Mr. Darcy, who cares? I mean, when do the zombies show up? Am I right? And also, about here is also where we get the interview you were talking about, where Greg Kinnear is getting an erection on national television or whatever's going on here. Yeah, so she decides that they're going to meet in this coffee shop. And she, of course, doesn't know it's Joe Fox. But when Chappelle says, you're not going to believe this.
He was like, who's that white girl that you like? Catherine Kelly? He's like, yeah, well...
It's her. Kathleen, I believe.
And he's going to ghost her, but then he decides to go in.
Well, he didn't ghost her, but he's
making
fun of her.
No, he was thinking about it. He walks down the block like he's going to just leave her.
She felt like she got ghosted.
Right.
Because he shows up and says, hey, what are you doing? Blah, 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 blah. And I feel like, just tell him, bitch. Tell him that that's you.
Say anything.
He plays this cat and mouse game the whole time.
No, but we're literally at an hour. There's another hour. Where he just catfishes her for an hour.
She shuts, despite he knows who she is and what he is doing to her, he still closes down her bookstore, makes her quit.
Is this when Edith Bunker was like trying to talk to her dead mother, like Meg Ryan's character's dead mother?
That's...
I'll ask what your mother feels. She doesn't know.
She had a locket with her picture in it, and she made her... Her realizes this traumatic effect. Oh, my mother's still dead. Thank you for showing the picture. Thank you for showing the picture of her. Thank you for even acknowledging the fact that I have failed because she said, do nothing.
We also just should mention, this movie isn't just long because the catfishing thing is. Everything takes forever. The scene where they're at the coffee shop, for example.
Yeah.
He leaves. He comes back. He comes in knowing that she's supposed to be the date. But then he kind of sits down and goes, oh, it's you. And then he sits down with her for a bit, and she goes, get out of here. I'm waiting for someone else. So he orders a drink. He sits behind her with this decaf macchiato. And then she sees him in the mirror. And then he comes back and sits with her. And then she tells him off by saying he's a suit, as though he's never heard that his entire life as a millionaire in Manhattan. And he's butthurt, and he leaves. But, like, the scene takes 15 minutes. Right. And again, I know you guys want to move the plot ahead, but this movie is all about these plotting scenes. You said, does AOL have money in this? It has to, because we hear that charming man go, you've got mail, like seven times. We hear the dial-up sound of those, because when she's upset and she goes home, she wants to hear an email from him to say, like, why he wasn't there. But we have to then hear why everyone thinks... My favorite bit.
That's actually the funny part. They're trying to speculate why the fuck he didn't show up.
Right.
And coincidentally, there was an article in the newspaper where there's a rooftop killer.
And Steve Zahn is like, maybe he was a serial killer. And again, I get it. Tom Hanks is a good-looking guy, but he has kind of this goofy youthness to him. But it's Meg Ryan. The idea that the only person Meg Ryan could date one day is a serial killer. This is my boyfriend Jeffrey Dahmer. Ignore the chocolates in his pocket.
Well, you could have been a true crime fanatic there and said Dennis Rader, because he was actually married.
Well,
I'm going to shut up now about that. Anyway,
this is my friend. He's a writer and a professor. His name is Ted Kaczynski. He's an intellectual himself. Recycling snake. See, he has all sorts of ideas.
Actually, this brings up a good point, which we have to talk about internet.
Oh yeah, because we have so many young people. Remember, WhatsApp is owned by the Russians, and
just remember, children, Nigeria is not a monarchy.
Right. don't pick up any random phone calls. You know, if there's no caller ID, don't answer it. Avoid, always delete your spam folders on your Google Mail. What's good internet hacking tips?
Good internet hacking tips?
No, good internet safety tips. You know what I'm saying? Look at me, you got Facebook, you got all this kind of stuff. Don't go to your requested messages. Do you know about this? So, like, if you go to Instagram or...
Yeah.
There's, like, a whole section. Never answer anything.
AmericanPatriotNews.us is not a legitimate news site. That's another important internet safety tip.
That's good to know. Just anything you apply in real life, apply it to the internet. Don't talk to strangers. The women hitting you up randomly, asking you, hey, how you doing? They're catfishing you. I know people who've gotten catfish. So check this out. So in college, I knew a guy. He drove from North Alabama all the way to South Georgia to be with this girl who still lived with she would let him on. She still lived at home. She did not look like in the pictures. It was all this ugly shit that happened. So if anything about this movie you can take away, it's just be careful who you talk to. You know?
The most important thing is live comedy. Just assume that podcast hosts are as handsome as you want, but don't date anyone until you've met them in person.
Absolutely. And first date tips. Listen, don't go out and eat at a restaurant. This is actually from the other Tom Hanks movie, Sleepless in Seattle. But he makes a great point, but he's giving advice to his son. First date should be drinks and not dinner, because in the middle of dinner, if you don't like the girl, you can't leave because it's dinner. With drinks, you can just bounce. I'm really stretching this internet tips here. We talked about spam.
If you ever find yourself in 1998 again somehow through some miracle, just remember, A, the internet's going to suck, and B, people really couldn't catfish back then.
Well, I mean, okay, here's the honest answer. The first question is always ASL, and followed very closely, age, sex, location. But second...
Yes, yes, and yes.
The honest answer for all of this might be the most exactly 1998 movie that has ever existed. First of all, Tom Hanks. No, it's just that, like, internet is good enough and quick enough that dating was happening... But in a mainstream way.
But okay, so before this,
yeah,
highly coupled, not in person. So there was what, video dating?
First of all, 100% there was video dating. And if you have not Googled, YouTubed video dating tapes from the 80s, you have not spent a good Saturday evening.
So check this out. Video dating was what? You would record yourself
in front of a Sears background. So it's like wavy and it's just like...
Sears was an appliance store, a place you got your passport pictures.
Yeah, and family photos. And you'd see a guy with a vague mustache going, "Hello, do you like to have a cigarette after we make whoopee? Well, then you're not welcome because I don't date smokers." And that's what it was.
Sounds like a very specific memory for you, Nick.
And then they have like shirts that are like unbuttoned, like down to here. And you're just like, well, I'm proud of you to have chest hair, but I don't need to see any of that. And then before that, there were mixers and matchmakers.
What was it? You had
pornography.
Well, it's better than the Kmart people. Attention shopper, there's a blue light special in my pants.
But no, let's just take a beat here for a second and realize how much porn has affected. No. Check this out.
Oh, I agree with you. It's just a funny.
Okay, so in the early 2000s, it was about, hey, who has the smallest phone and things like that. But when the internet came about and people noticed that they can fucking get porn on their phones, somehow they just fucking get bigger. Like, I saw something on the tablet than the phone.
Phones are more of growers than showers.
Max Plus with 4K.
So first of all, Daniel, well done on the growers, not showers. But also, remember, the heads of these companies are also boomers, so they can't see the small screens anymore.
That's
I love my old man, but the font on his phone is exactly like 12 characters on the entire thing. And you're just, so he's reading texts about, you know, a yard away down here. Oh. And he's like, can read like 6 words.
This sure is sexy. I tell you what, goodness gracious.
Have you seen Martha Stapleton?
I can almost make out a boob.
You should see how many pixels her boobs take up. 7.
2 frames per.
Remember, it's like ASCII art pornography.
I think the boob should have been an R. Then they should have, like, fucking done this. Okay. I'm chatting. From I Am Chatting, before that, it was videotape. There was video dating.
Yeah.
There could have been, what, some type of telegram type shit? Or a fax machine?
Writing letters like a per...
Oh, the paper emails, yes.
The paper emails?
Whatever happened to the good old days when the phone was just a phone?
What, you know, the Polaroid dating?
Oh, God, can you imagine? By the way, I do realize as you're describing this, the previous generations, the further you go back in the modern era, the more likely they are to be a serial killer. Here's what I mean. So if all of your dating is still through text only, not great. But if you're still asking people of VHS tapes of them, even worse. And if you're like, I'd like a Polaroid of you. Kitty porn dungeon. Well, like, I don't know what to tell you.
Like, sometimes I wish I could go back to, even though like I was, what, the movie is 98. I was fucking 6 years old. But I wish I lived in that era where you didn't have all this fucking shit on your phone.
Yeah.
It sucked.
Well, I will say, as the three of us are in the working world, email not being a thing I had to deal with 24/7 would have been lovely. Yeah. Mm. Just again, like the idea, yeah, I get it. When I sit down at the computer, when I get to work, fine. But the idea of it being in my pocket constantly is horseshit.
I think it says a lot that we've mostly talked about what the internet was like in the good old days as a bunch of old foggies. And I do have to say, these days, the idea of speaking, I may not be speaking from experience here, but people meeting online and actually starting a relationship, that's not quite as unusual anymore.
No, it's not, but it's more specific. The idea of going to a generic chat room to find your love interest is a little different, I'd say. Also, the idea that you're paying by the minute for the internet is funny. Because, like, nowadays, like, we're on the internet, all of us right now, to check IMDb to make sure we get the characters. I'm the fucking movie streaming to keep it straight.
Think we should, do you think we should, like, go ahead to the end here? Because it's pretty predictable how this movie ends up.
So, I will say, so at this point, Greg Kinnear and Meg Ryan go to a movie together. They're talking during the dancing hot dog, which is fine, but some old woman gives them the business. But they have a very amicable breakup around here because they're like, you know what?
She didn't vote in the last mayoral election.
Between Giuliani and whatever her name was, Moss. But, like, because he's... it's one of those fake Seinfeld, like, everyone's happy that we're breaking up kind of breakups. But now we still have like 90 minutes or 30 minutes left as the store is going out of business. There's this one author that's there earlier. She's had all of her book signings there, but now she's at Fox Books. And now, you know, like they're going out of business sale, and, you know, people are coming in crying because they're like, oh, you made me fall in love with Anne of Green Gables and all this nonsense. And so she finally walks into Fox Books and goes to the kids section, and it's
huge.
Well, and I will say too, this is where Nora Ephron and the fact that it's Meg fucking Ryan make a difference. We were kvetching earlier how rom-coms don't exist anymore except for with and
Lifetime, Netflix, straight to DVD,
and people who look good and sexy but can't act. But Meg Ryan walking through this kids section is emotionally impactful because she clearly loves what she does. She clearly loves to tell the stories and know the books and be with the kids. And when she sits down in that little kid chair And behind her, there's an employee who doesn't know, like, the book that this woman is looking for.
Mind you, the girl came in, she was like, compass. He was like, excuse me?
Shoe book.
Yeah.
How the fuck am I supposed to know what this is?
But Meg Ryan does. And, like, the whole reference is that, like, the corporations can't care. Which, again, is funny because Starbucks might as well have sponsored this thing. Or AOL. I mean, and again, there's not like there's some mom and pop internet out there, but corporations are all over this. Whatever. Tom Hanks is on the other side of this kind of open atrium watching her do this and realizes this is the problem.
What's fucked up is that he knows what he's doing. Twofold. He knows he's fucking her over because he made her and shut down her bookstore, and he knows he's catfishing her because she knows.
Well, and the other thing is, the answer to this movie is immediate and easy. Just say, because again, we're 75 minutes in when everything goes out of business. Ask her to be in charge of your children's section. It's so simple. And she will, and of course, the first thing she'll do is say no. And then the last 15 minutes is her being there and saying, I just want to be around these kids and these books. That's it. It's such a simple fix. But this is where we have the scene where they're stuck in the elevator. And
Tom, his boo, not Meg Ryan,
Parker Posey.
The doorman, and some old bitch with a dog. Very important.
Who's also in Sleepless, by the way. He's in that movie, too. He must be one of Nora Ephron's stable of actors.
Right.
But Tom Hanks at this point, since he's broken up with Parker Posey, he's kicked out of his apartment because he was living with her. And so he's sleeping on the yacht, one of three yachts next to each other, the Fox 1, Fox 2, Fox 3, like we're watching fucking Top Gun again. And Meg Ryan is by herself having a little sad.
In this glamorous New York apartment.
Yeah.
Somehow she able to afford. I mean, I guess that was back in the 90s where there's like rent control and things like that.
Which is a Steve Zahn joke. $4.25 a month with rent control, which I don't know. I know people who live in New York, and I love New York, but I think this is all a fantasy, right? Like, rent control can't work like this.
I mean, what? In Friends, somehow Monica is able, at one point able to, well, she had Rachel, whatever, but she was able to get that apartment because her grandmother had the apartment, and she pays, like, what, less than, like, $1,000 for this glamorous
giant apartment, which was also an episode of Seinfeld where at this point too we find out that Tom Hanks's dad is also breaking up with Jillian because she fell in love with the nanny and they're running off to get married,
which is karma if you actually listen to the refer.
Yep.
Because I think he was at Four Wives at the time.
Yes.
Three of them were where's his son's nanny, so.
Which is the scene we're talking about. Because Tom Hanks is making martinis, and he's like, she was my nanny. And he goes, really? What about, oh, no, she was also my nanny. Yeah.
You mean yeah.
Yeah, but Dabney Coleman and him are just kind of, like, chilling out. And
he has, like, a revelation, of course, when he talks to his dad. And this is the rom-com trope. You talk to someone that has been out of shape, and he gets the inspiration from them to go get the girl.
Well,
still another fucking 40 minutes left in this movie.
I will say, though, this is the scene that is, well, yes, but this is the scene where it's the creepiest because she's sick and he's coming to bring her flowers, right. and she's like, don't come up. And then someone else lets him up. And then he's like, don't come in. And he comes in anyway. Yeah. And then he, and like she's sniffly. And then she hears the knock at the door, even though she said, you can go, whatever. And so she's cleaning up the place. She puts on a robe over her gym jams because she's homesick. And again, I just for a second, I love how all 90s clothes are like bed sheets that are lightly tailored because this raincoat she puts on, it like David Duchovny would look small in it.
Oh, do you remember that? What was it? The World Is Not Enough, that James Bond thing where you pull the tab on a jacket and then it.
It's a parachute.
Yeah.
She's in a parachute. But like, not that she's trying to look sexy. She just doesn't want to be in her gym jams in front of a man when she's down with disease. But, like, he comes in. He looks for a thing. He's like, and he, like, tucks her into bed. leave the woman alone. And again, it's Tom Hanks. He can tuck me into bed any day of the week. But at the same time, it's like, dude, man, you got to go. You got to leave this place.
Oh, if Tom Hanks were ever on Cameo, he'd get like $500 a video to read The Cat in the Hat and lure children to sleep.
Oh, my God.
Well, not lure children to sleep. If he was on... soothe children to sleep.
Tom Hanks, a.k.a. the Pied Piper, has a lure.
I misspoke. I apologize to Mr. Hanks. Dude,
I want him to read me A Good Night Moon, and I want... Paul Giamatti to read me The Lorax. Ah, I'm the Lorax! I so frazzled and out of breath. So we will fundraise for that to happen. If it was on Cameo, man, I'll tell you what. It'll be on our Patreon.
I kind of want... our Patreon doesn't exist anymore, does it?
No, it doesn't. I'll tell you what. We do a GoFundMe for having actors do amazing things. We're there.
I have Werner Herzog do a Good Night Moon.
And also, good life night. Is meaningless good and the night, moon is light.
Moon, good night.
I will say, what this movie didn't need but gets is a fourth act where he's decided now we're going to become best friends because they're having conversations still on email where he knows who she is and she doesn't.
Just take advantage of her. Fuck this guy.
Yeah, a little bit. Although he's got a golden retriever. Golden retriever owners can't be evil, can they?
Well, but this is where Sudsy was... No.
He had a German Brace
yourself,
shepherd.
He had German shepherd. But this is where...
That, and this is true, he named Blondie.
Uh-huh. And by the by, this is where Sudsy, you were talking about, maybe he had 152 moles removed. Maybe he had 152...
Oh, the Clark bar.
Or maybe he looked like... he was told he looked like Clark Gable 152 times. Whatever it was. But this is where they're now... We're friends and we're just jerking around because you're unemployed now. I've beaten you. I've destroyed your business. And now we're all wearing beige because it's the 90s. But they go shopping in an open marketplace. And then this time she's like, I want to meet you. Right. I'm working on a novel. I want to be a novelist. And maybe I should look at this guy again. You know, she's feeling confident. She's got some lady energy going, right? Some big lady energy. And so she's finally saying, maybe it's time I meet this guy. So she says, look, I want to meet at this specific park, which is near, I think, Columbus Circle. But and he goes, look, I'll be there with my dog. And she goes there by herself for half a second. I think it's the 91st Street Garden. And there's nothing. And then the golden retriever runs by and he goes, Brinkley. And then the movie ends immediately, right? The music starts playing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which is also in Sleepless in Seattle.
What's the deal with this movie depending on like 50s pop songs and then one random song by the Cranberries?
I'll tell you what, Nora Ephron has a style. Anyway, he dries her tears and her last line is, I always hoped it was you, I think is the line.
That's bullshit.
It's bullshit. She should have... If you're going to have them kiss at the end, which is fine, the first thing she needs to do is slap him across the face because the last hour of my life has been the two of them...
That's where the movie lost me. Specifically is when he showed up to your apartment with flowers while she was sick. That's where...
It's so weird. It's... I will say it's a Nora Ephron movie. Everything is gorgeous. There are flowers everywhere. And the movie, that's why the movie fucking tricks you. Because the apartments are gorgeous. The bookstores, both of them, even the corporate bookstore. I want to be there and look at books and have a coffee. And the kid bookstore, I'm like, oh, I bet you they have Shel Silverstein. Oh, there's Shel Silverstein. And the dogs. And then... The You've Got Mail, it's so warm and lived in. I almost wish it was made by a worse director so you'd see through the bullshit quicker.
It was in 90s New York. 90s New York was not this clean.
It was. I mean, at that point, Giuliani was making sure it was all Disneyfied.
I locked up all the prostitutes and kicked them to New Jersey. Yeah. But that's, and I will say, we can talk about the end of this, and this is, we're done. But I will say, it is, I consider it a missed opportunity that at the end of the credits, you didn't have the door slam and it goes, goodbye. I mean, how do you screw that up? Dude, we heard You've Got Mail 1,000 times. The titular line is in it not only 17 million times, but both of them mouth You've Got Mail as the dude says it. We should have had the door slam and go, goodbye.
This opportunity. There should be a sequel.
No. No, at this point, there really shouldn't be.
And it takes place in an IRC chat room or Facebook chat.
Yeah, if Zuckerberg...
Oh, if it was the metaverse? Oh, my God.
But like, I'm embarrassed to see.
The Zuckerberg clone just starts sweating.
Exactly. There's strip clubs in the metaverse.
Oh, there sure are.
Of course there are.
Man, I tell you what. I got it a Quest 2 for like a Christmas gift last year. I use it to sip whiskey and play mini golf. Putt-putt mini golf, and to pretend like I'm Darth Vader. You know, like, that's what it's for.
I like it.
And then, you know what? If you're having one of those nostalgia moments, you can do one of those map things, and you're like, and now I'm where I had spring break, and now I'm in Disney World, and now I'm in Paris. And you're just, like, sitting around drinking, like, ah, yes, red wine in Paris. But, like obviously, there's nothing wrong with Oculus. I have one. I'm nothing against it. The idea that we would live any more virtually, I'm a millennial, maybe it's just that I'm too old for this shit, but it's just like...
Riggs!
When we were recording virtually, I missed seeing your beautiful face. So, like, this movie... he's fine. But
what's going on? Where am I? No.
But there's just something about this movie which is just so exactly 1998 that, like... You do one or the other, not both. So, like, we're going to be... Because at one point, he tries to message her, and she's shocked. Shocked! And I'm just like, you've been emailing pages! Ugh. Okay, so, Daniel, you're first here. I'm second. And, Nora, you said it was a movie you've seen 1,000 times, so you're third. Would you recommend this, Sudsy?
The two leads are charming, and I guess... I really only think it works if you're one of those people who's nostalgic for the 90s because you need to see this and be like, oh, no, this is what it was really like. This is the sort of stuff that was happening, the whole Walmart versus the small town business, except, of course, it's in New York, so everyone's concerned about just the West End neighborhood, which no one ever should. But the two leads are charming. It's a fine idea. I think they could have executed it better, but it could have been a lot worse. I wasn't overwhelmed. I wasn't underwhelmed. I was whelmed.
For me, this is a perfect... Again, I'm in my 30s. This is a perfect movie to watch with your parents. There's nothing inappropriate about it. Everyone's charmed by the cast. There's nothing offensive. They even invited a black person. Like...
What? The whole fucking New York.
Can you imagine New York with only one minority? How charming would that? No, I just mean like it's the person who brings mashed potatoes. There's nothing wrong with it. Everyone likes them, but it's not going to wow anyone. And it takes 2 hours. So whenever you're watching this, whenever's the big family meal, you put it on. It's fine. If you go to the other room to talk to your uncle for 20 minutes, you're not going to be lost with the plot. Like, but would I say this is your like, stop now and see it? Nah. I mean, if you put it on around your Valentine's Day feast, it better be on when dinner's on, because otherwise everyone will be asleep by the time it's over.
Yeah, you have a Valentine's Day feast?
Oh, you got a bone first, otherwise everyone's... you can't have... Sex after dinner at Longhorn Steakhouse. No one's going to get off the couch. But I just mean in general, like, if you're going to do this as a dinner and a movie, you've gone through 6 courses. It's so long. But everyone's in it's charming. The jokes land. It's just such a weird premise. It does. Again, this movie is 1998. It doesn't age well.
I like rom-coms. One of my favorite rom-coms to the top of my head right now is Fear the Launch. You know, we got Back in the Con and Jessica Parker.
Yeah, there you go.
I use that as the gold standard for rom-com. Again, but that was in the 2000s. This movie was in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't hate this movie. I know we've been shitting on it for about an hour, but honestly, it is a feel-good movie.
Yep.
But it's an hour too long. That being said, I still would watch this over and over again, simply because it's just like that tension after that coffee shop scene. Like, you knew what was going on, but you're just like, fuck, go ahead and say this. So you still have that audience pool. It's a safe movie to watch.
Yeah.
But there's no sex scene. I don't think, but there's only like three kisses in this movie.
Sure.
But no, I think, though, at the time, it was a very cool premise of like what would internet dating be like on the safe side, you know?
Well, and... Well said. I will also toss at our audience, send us rom-coms you want us to do. I mean, one of our most popular episodes of the last year was The 10 Things I Hate About You, which in some ways qualifies for everything we just said. It's a teen romance, but still, like, they don't even make teen romances with good actors anymore. And Julia Stiles and Heath Ledger and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, good actors. David Krumholtz. Like, so... I like those kinds of movies. And of course, as I'm saying this now, next week we're doing Sleepless in Seattle. The week after it, we're doing When Harry Met Sally. And the week after that, just so we're still Nora Ephron, but a little bit different, we're doing Michael with John Travolta. So we've got...
Oh boy, that one is classic.
Oh, he's Archangel Michael, but he lives in some old lady's house.
Well, she prayed for his help and he came, and that's... apparently the last time he can be on Earth, and he loves Frosted Flakes, if I remember that movie correctly.
And he hits on ladies a lot. But we just wanted to do some Nora Ephron movies, and so we're going to go through some rom-coms. So if you have anyone else you want us to hit on, wait, let me try that again. Anyone else you want us to cover, let us know, because we will do more rom-coms. It's just something I didn't grow up with much. And I'm sure there's some real gems. Someone sent me one called Baby Cakes, which we might get to.
Ooh, there you go. I've never heard of it, but the title's like, this sounds horrible.
Oh, don't worry about it. Ricky Lake kidnaps a man to make him fall in love with her.
Oh, there you go.
Yep. So stay tuned next week and every future week when we put movies on trial. And by the by, thanks for doing what you do. I hope you have a lovely February. And when we do Sleepless in Seattle, hope you have a lovely romantic Valentine's Day. And since we're doing it, of course, listen along with someone you love, and that'll be a real test of your relationship. Thanks, guys. Season 9 of Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and stars Daniel Suttis and Matt Quinn. The theme music is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod of Incomtech.com and is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and review us wherever podcasts are found. Thanks, guys.